really excited to welcome Dr. Charles Bloom, Chief Medical Officer of Health Alliance Plan in Michigan, to our podcast. Charlie is a respected executive among health plan leaders across the country and has been at the helm of HAP as CMO since 2019, having previously served as VP of Utilization Management and Provider Relations, and before that, as a medical director for the plan, overseeing a variety of different functions and roles. Today, we're going to dive in with Dr. Bloom on his thoughts of leading a renowned regional health plan, the nuances of being part of a larger health system ecosystem, and what he thinks the major pressing issues are for facing health plans today. So first off, thank you so much, Charles, for joining us, and I really appreciate this.
Thanks, Eric. Really appreciate you having me.
So, the first question I'd like to ask is, you are a clinician by training, and you've had a career progression from the clinical side to the health plan side. Could you just walk us through how that progression was and when you decided to enter the health plan space?
Absolutely. So I'm an ED physician by training. I trained in Southeast Michigan. I finished residency in 2003. My wife and I were both from Michigan, but ended up actually taking a job out of residency at University Medical Center in Las Vegas. So I worked at UMC for about 10 years clinically and took on different roles there. We were a county-owned urban tertiary and quaternary care center. We did a significant amount of trauma in addition to being the only burn center in all of southern Nevada, northern Arizona, and California and Utah. So we had about a 270-mile radius where we took care of folks in the Southwest. Loved my job clinically. It really was a very rewarding place to work. We also had contracts for the ED group that I worked for at a few of the Dignity hospitals in the Valley and in Las Vegas as well. So, but we did look, we started having children not long after we got there, started to think about where we wanted to set up our family roots. Ultimately had a chance to come back to Michigan for a job clinically. The group that I worked for in Las Vegas get a contract or the contract at Genesis Regional Medical Center, which is a community hospital in Grand Blanc, Michigan, which is between Flint and Detroit. So that's how we landed back home, kind of by accident. Ultimately was the chair and ran quality of Genesis, which is a 65,000 visit community ED. A full dually accredited residency, both allopathic and osteopathic residents, was very rewarding. It was an interesting dynamic coming in as a private group for another group that was there for, I think, over 20 years. Genesis PHO was also one of our partners. So, thinking about value-based care and my journey into the health plan space, I was introduced, which is an experience I did not have in Nevada. It was fee for service. Acute care, manage as quickly and efficiently as you can in the ED to a different environment at Genesis, working with the PHO, which is really an advanced value-based care arrangement that was much further along than other areas of, I'll say, the state and certainly my experience in Nevada. So I had the opportunity to learn what is the ED's role in value-based care. Is there a role? We did attempt to do some things around quality incentives for our docs, not just value around fee for service and RVU generation, but really how do we create the quality experience? We did some innovative things within the ED to move care up into triage, which was certainly not ideal. But when you have things and challenges like most hospitals do around boarding, flow, and throughput issues, we certainly created some opportunities there. From that position, and I'll get there eventually, but from that position, I met Dr. Genord, who was at Health Plus. He was the new CEO of a small regional health plan in the Flint area and had done a buyout, had some financial struggles around their Medicaid business or line of business. We're ultimately looking for a partner, and Dr. Genord ultimately worked with Henry Ford and HAP to foster the arrangement between Henry Ford, HAP, and Health Plus. But he also needed some docs to do some basic functions in the health plan, like utilization management. So, as an ED physician working irregular hours, I had an opportunity to do some basic utilization reviews with Dr. Genord at Health Plus. And that was my first foray into the health plan space. And as I took on more and more responsibility in what was supposed to be my part-time utilization review work, that ultimately led to me taking a full-time position once the arrangement between Health Plus and HAP Came about in 2017. I started as a medical director full time at HAP, and then worked clinically for a couple of years thereafter, part time. So that's how I ultimately landed at the plan. It was not part of my career path that I expected when I graduated medical school and or my residency, but really found I'll say value for me being part of an integrated health system, which HAP is a wholly owned subsidiary of Henry Ford Health. About 400,000 lives that we manage a little over now, all lines of business, and partner obviously with our provider organization. We had initially about 30% of our lives aligned with Henry Ford, and which means 60, 70% were non-aligned lives or attributed lives with Henry Ford, meaning the rest of our network we had to continue to manage through partnerships and find ways to work together with the rest of our provider partners. And Michigan's a unique scenario, which is different than what I experienced in Las Vegas, and also spent some time in Arizona as well, where we really have a physician organization set up. And part of this is in response to what the Blues had helped build, which is the PGIP program, and really creating quality incentives for provider organizations who had to build the infrastructure in order to manage populations. So it's really getting along that value-based care continuum. And what I found really rewarding at HAP and being part of Henry Ford is being able to develop those relationships. How do we ultimately advance from a pay-for-performance value-based arrangement to actually manage cost of care? And one of the things you'll hear, and I'll probably say it five times during this podcast, is, and it's a little, I'll say simplistic, but if you think about the triple aim, the quadruple aim, and then ultimately the quintuple aim, is, can we align payer, provider, and patient to ultimately deliver on a better experience, ultimately deliver on a better health outcome, which we can debate quality metrics and are they really measurements of quality or health outcome? We could debate that all day, but it is the best we have today. And then I very much believe, which is one of the things that I've really developed over the 7 years that I've been here, is value follows quality and not the other way around. So I think being part of an integrated health system really gives us the ability and the opportunity to deliver on that promise. Sometimes, it's a challenge where we don't necessarily have incentives aligned, and other times we have pockets where we can really do some really great and innovative things. So, more than what you asked, Eric, and went into a little more of the later conversation, but I really do love the work that I do. One of the challenges, I'll go into one more piece here. One of the challenges I had when I was in the ED, one of the frustrations as we think about burnout, and often we talk about physician burnout, multiple specialties. ED was one of those specialties where those numbers were the highest, especially through the pandemic, is not working nights, weekends, and stress. Frankly, I don't miss, or excuse me, I do miss that the most. What I didn't miss and where some of my struggles were is being able to do your job well. And I think if you asked any physician in any specialty, that's one of their frustrations, whether that's EMR, whether that's lack of integration, whether that's not having the tools you need to succeed, whether that's things that you have to do in order to meet, payer obligations. So that's where I think, as I think about my current state and the future of healthcare, physician leaders can really lead us to the path of better experience, better outcome, and better value. And all three of those really have to be part of the value equation in our North Star and what we're trying to accomplish. And I'm able to do that working in an integrated health system with partners and with trust that we really feel like we can move the needle and move forward in advance, really, for our patients, which is ultimately why we're here.
No, I appreciate that journey. And I imagine that a lot of folks who are working health plans that on the clinician side have a similar journey where they kind of started getting their toes wet a little bit and started getting deeper and deeper in. And I have some questions around that alignment with health system, but I have one thing I want to ask first. And, I've been now kind of focused on value-based specialty care for quite a bit. And you said something early on that kind of surprised me around the role of the ER in value-based care. And we know that a lot of the dollars get spent once the person gets into the emergency room and gets admitted and gets those procedures. But I had actually not heard a lot of instances where there's value-based care kind of focused at the ER level. And I don't know if that was an anomaly where you were at, or if it's you're seeing it more, but like if I'd love to hear your thoughts on that role of the ER on curbing those costs.
Number one, there's an opportunity. Number two, I think it's a uphill battle to understand. And in this country, which by the way, I couldn't agree more with, is the ED really is the safe zone for patients that can't get care anywhere else, right? Number one, it's mandated by law. Number two, it is the only place that anybody can walk in and get care with, regardless of ability to pay for that care or not. So I do think it's an interesting dynamic and an interesting challenge. My experience at Genesis that I mentioned already, part of that was around creating, some uplifts quality. We actually set up some programs, a couple of programs where we would have high-risk discharges, and then we do follow-up phone calls within 24, 48 hours, make sure that they had their appointment set, make sure that they could see their PCP, make sure that their symptoms were improved or resolved. That's really a care management program, right? That's what we do in multiple levels around specialty and primary care. I would tell you that the incentives in the ED, though, even in the ideal state, don't necessarily line up yet. And that's why I think, people have tried with some of the ED work, but it probably hasn't gained as much traction because there's more opportunity in other areas around specialty care and primary care. But I
What
still
about?
think, certainly there's opportunity to incentivize your docs, create process, and set up programs to keep people, number one, from needing the ED, and number two, setting up options for those that don't necessarily need the ED, but also have other options. And anybody has kids or sick parents, at 3 in the morning, there's often limited options other than landing in the ED.
And from the either the health plan perspective, whether at HAP or elsewhere, what have you seen work well? Because like you mentioned, you have to once they're in the door, it's kind of it's hard to do anything at that point. It's about keeping them out of the door and then keeping them safe after they leave the door. So what have you
That's exactly
seen?
right.
And like either whether it's from HAP or elsewhere, what strategies have you seen to help people not, to prevent them from getting into the ER in the first place?
Yeah, so I think number one is access. So access to, I'll say, appropriate care, access to expert care. So often, one of the things we saw through the pandemic was the significant advancement of virtual capabilities. Whether that was a vendor support, whether that was a point solution, whether that was primary care access, and certainly now even specialty access. So I do think one of the things that number one we're challenged with, number one and number two, where we've seen success is when folks have a reliable source to ask questions: what do I do? Where do I go? How do I get the care I need? We can really, from the ED perspective, there's a lot of opportunity to avoid unnecessary ED visits. Again, often at 2 in the morning, the safest thing is either call your doc, call your nurse. If it sounds somewhat challenging or questionable, go to the ED, get evaluated, right? Often the answer is, I'll see you at 8 a.m., I'll see you at 9 a.m., or you can try this in the meantime. I think there's significant opportunity there. That's the most basic form. I couldn't agree more from the ED perspective that, once the patient's there, you got to take care of them, number one. It's the right thing to do, number two. Number three is how do you appropriately manage them and then get them to the right place post-discharge? And one of the challenges I had from the ED, which, this is my own personal experiences, often I ended up keeping patients because it was the safest thing to do, right? Didn't have an alternative. Couldn't get them to a SNF. Couldn't get somebody into the home. AFib's one of the ones that we really created with our cardiology team. Created an innovative approach where, most AFibs used to be admitted all the time, right? We had admit folks, number one, for anticoagulation, number two, rate control, and potentially the question of conversion. Well, where we ultimately found is if we can actually get them in to see the electrophysiologist or the cardiologist within 24, 48 hours, get their rate under control, get them started on anticoagulation, you really don't have a need for the inpatient or even observation stay. But you have to know that they're going to get seen in 24 or 48 hours to be able to manage their care. And that's one of the things from the ED perspective we struggled with. That, I'll say, approach is not unique to the ED or to AFib or one specific, is how do we get folks in the right place, make sure that they're managed appropriately, not overload the ED, not overload, say, an urgent care, and then make sure that we actually have the patient set up with appropriate follow-up so they can access care and not have to fall back into the ED.
And as you talk about the education and in implementing those pathways and kind of broader sense on engaging providers, right? At Henry Ford, you've got employed providers, and then you've got at HAP, let's say you have Henry Ford employed providers, and then you've got kind of physicians in the community. How do you go about educating, engaging those different groups about different initiatives that HAP is doing or different kind of value-based pushes that are important, like what we're talking about. What's the approach between the two different groups, or is it the same approach?
Yeah, so that's a really complex question. So I think if we think about what the true north should be, right? So I very much believe as a health plan leader, the role of a clinical team at the health plan, if we can get to that ideal state, should diminish significantly, right? The role of the health plan shouldn't be direct care management, or excuse me, direct patient management in any way, shape, or form. Frankly, I would argue pop health management should really be at the provider level. Now, the challenge that providers have, right, and that's where we have the opportunity, number one, in an integrated system. Number two, as we partner with other physician organizations or other providers, is do they have the tools and the resources and the reimbursement to be able to support those programs, whether that's a care management program, a maternity program, whatever that alternative approach outside of the physician and patient visit, you know, the 15 minutes in the office, we have to somehow create wraparound services to be able to support the patient that when they have questions, we can answer those questions. When there's an opportunity to do proactive outreach, change how we're managing that care, not necessarily wait for them to show up at our office with a question, but actually proactively change that model of care with support services. So the provider can actually be the captain of the ship and manage the complex care when the complex care is there, but hit the easy button for both patient and provider. And the role of the health plan, like I said, really over time can and should diminish as we change the incentive, change the reimbursement model, but also provide resources for both patient and provider to be able to provide those services directly out of the medical home. And when I say medical home, that often refers to, you know, the primary care home, which, by the way, I completely agree with. But I know one of the questions and challenges that we have, both in system and out, is where do specialists fit into that conversation? I would argue that once you have the relationship with the specialist, that is part of your medical home, right? And how do we actually get away from the transactional conversation or the transactional relationship to essentially that support and wraparound service? And we've done that, I'll say, innovatively within system, because again, we, number one, not only are we aligned from an enterprise perspective, we actually have true downside risk arrangements with our aligned attributed lives within Henry Ford. We also have multiple relationships with other physician organizations where we actually share risk as well. So not just pay for performance, but actually share upside and downside risk. And I think that changes the dynamic and changes the relationship on how can we support, whether that's through analytics, whether that's through identification of folks who need services, but also then reimburse those services so you can provide that supplemental care outside of the physician office visit.
And, touching upon the specialty side, obviously, we've talked about this before that, over half the dollars are spent on the specialty care, if not more. And, where do we need to get to for specialists to understand that, hey, this is ideally we're treating everybody the same, but at least having the understanding that, look, this is a fully, at-risk patient in our system. Whatever I do, anything unnecessary is going to contribute to the worsening bottom line. That's not a common thought for a lot of specialists because we get paid by RVUs and kind of fee for service. What will it take to kind of take that education to get there where the health plan and in Henry Ford's case, the health system and the providers are all really seeing that same alignment rather than who's, different cost centers or revenue centers?
Yeah, it's a. I would tell you that's a tough question and a tough problem to solve. I'm not sure that any health system or anybody's completely figured it out. I think we've done really well in pockets. I do think one of the challenges you have is, you know, not only on the primary care side, but certainly on the specialty side, I think it's a little more significant. Is we really have, you know, a foot in the value-based care canoe and we have a foot in the fee-for-service canoe. And how do we do both? Because both are not going away for a while. Certainly, the true north is to truly get to value-based care. And value-based care isn't just about more efficient, less expensive care. It's ultimately a better health outcome. And as I said, you know, value actually follows that. But we will have both reimbursement mechanisms for some time. So where we have the opportunity is partnership on how do we change incentives? How do we change compensation? How do we actually incentivize docs meaningfully to not just get paid for their doing more? And on the specialty side, that becomes a challenge. And one of the things that, you know, we've struggled with, and we did this is one of my challenges in the ED, is as I had quality incentives, as I had compensation models to incentivize quality versus volume or an RVU-based model, is it enough to change behavior? And often on the specialty side, that's a no,
It's not,
right?
it's not.
Because, I'm thinking about orthopedists. So our orthopedists come out of a meeting where, drive volume, drive more patients into the system, make sure we're taking care of our patients appropriately. And then I've got this health plan guy over here saying, wait a minute, I should do less. And how do I look at conservative options and therapies? I think if we get physicians in the room together, nobody's going to say, I want a worse experience for my patient. I want a worse experience for me. I want less valuable health outcomes for my patient, and I don't want to provide value. We're co all completely aligned on that. So we have to keep that as our true north. How do we then create incentives, comp models to keep our physicians whole, keep our health system whole, and obviously the most important piece of that is provide quality and value to our patients.
You
And I
know,
think it's
and
one thing that, and I'm just going to go off on a little bit of
yep.
a tangent here. One thing that I've learned and continue to learn within our system is I've never met a doc that thinks they're providing low value, low quality care, right? So and I think, by the way, that is wholly true. Where I think the opportunity is, and we don't necessarily all think about it this way. I certainly have a newfound perspective in my role here at the health plan. Is we have to remember that we have patients and purchasers who are demanding quality and value, right? And patients might not even know it because they're often having their health care, paid for by their employer. If we think about it, government agencies, CMS is certainly putting pressure, appropriately so, on how do we actually make sure outcomes and reimbursement is tied to outcomes as opposed to the fee-for-service model. So one of the things that we've done and really worked with some of our primary care leadership is how do we actually get our docs in front of our purchasers, in front of our employer groups, show the value. So at Henry Ford, we have a direct-to-employer model, which we're not even at the health plan part of, believe it or not. We actually use a different plan to administer the benefit. That will change in the near future, potentially as we look for other ways to manage for our health system. I have a brother who is a single business owner. When we have 5-6% increases annually of medical expense, our employers are desperate to help figure out how to manage those costs, number one. And our employees are desperate as more and more costs are put onto the employee
Yep.
on how to better manage, but create access, create a better experience, and create value. So one of the things that we've done as I started was really getting our providers to the table with us at the health plan, to our purchasers, to our employer groups, to our HR representatives, to our CFOs. And one of the things that we've done at Henry Ford is our CFO for the enterprise, Robin Damschroeder, is our CFO. She's also our value-based care leader. So we've created a value-based care structure that is led by our chief financial officer, which, by the way, if we don't figure out the finances, we'll never get there. We're just nibbling at the edges. So I think it's really a unique approach for us as a health system on how do we actually show our purchasers, our consumers, that we can and will provide high quality care and value. And you have to have both.
And you said something earlier without getting, you don't have to get into any details about it, but like the ability to modify reimbursement, right? So for a Medicare shared savings program with an ACO, like it's the Medicare fee schedule and that's it, right? How do regional plans have the advantage, or do they have an advantage of being able to be a little more flexible with those reimbursements to help drive those behavior chains?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So I do think whether it's within the enterprise between aligned attributed lives between the health plan and the health system, or whether it's other physician organizations who are willing to align with the payer on risk. And certainly there's trust components you have to be able to show. You have to be able to be transparent on where and how the dollars come in. So the premium dollar and essentially the spend, and make sure that there is a trust component, certainly within the other enterprise that's built in. But as we think about working with other provider organizations as well, the idea is there's only one premium dollar, right? So you literally have $1 coming in. My opinion is, and will forever be as our true north, is we as physicians, and I'm going to say as providers, even though I work at the health plan, our opportunity is to decide how we spend that dollar most effectively for our patient. And there's nobody better equipped than providers, right? As long as it's a health plan or a point solution or somebody else within the ecosystem telling providers what to do or how to do it. There's dollars being pulled out, so percentages of that premium being pulled out of the ecosystem, where I would hold steady and certainly keep as a value statement would be, we would want every bit of that premium dollar being spent on healthcare, right? And so that's where we can do things differently as a regional health plan being owned and operated wholly by a health system. Is how do we reduce the administrative waste, the administrative burden where it's unnecessary, not value add for the patient, and then still use that premium dollar or what's left of that premium dollar to spend on patient care. And if we do so, then we actually have the choice of, all right, do we pay for procedure A, B, or C, or do we pay for procedure A, B, and C, but we also supplement with a, say, a care management program or a navigation program or pay differently. Somebody that's doing conservative, non-intervention based care, so they can, number one, provide the service, number two, be able to scale it so we can ultimately achieve, maybe if we do less procedures appropriately so, but still have alternative therapies for our patient through a multidisciplinary approach, and get there before the intervention if you have an equivalent outcome. And often we'll see a better outcome without an intervention. But don't necessarily have a way to reimbursement. So we really have the opportunity to change how and where we spend that premium dollar.
Do you think the larger national health plans have that same flexibility, or is it is it tif more difficult to innovate in that regard?
Well, I think it's the answer is yes and no. So I think certainly United being the largest payer, but also the largest provider organization in the country, is doing that in pockets. And they have scale and dollars and resources that we'll never have or see as a regional health plan. Where I think we have the opportunity to be, I'll say, more nimble and flexible is because of our size, we and because of our partnerships with our provider network, which is literally a geographic area that is more defined, is we can actually be more innovative. We can actually change, within plan year. If we can show a business case to make an investment here, I think it's a little easier and we can be a little more nimble where some of the nationals may struggle. But we certainly don't have the scale or the resource or some of the dollars to invest where I think some of that innovation is actually happening with the nationals.
And speaking of the resources, and we've talked about this a little bit as well, when you look at like analytics and actuarial work and like measuring, we had the team from Accorded on where they're working with health plans to try to kind of like almost like centralize that work. How does HAP or other regional plans, your colleagues, approach those types of things? Because obviously, any program you're putting in place, any changing in reimbursement, you're going to need to know what the impact is on the different cost levers and revenue levers. How have you guys approached this as a regional plan, which, as you mentioned, there may be some limitation on resources and getting some of that computing power?
Yeah, so it's a multi-pronged approach. So number one, we rely on clearing houses. So on our actuarial service, we use Milliman. So certainly we have larger resources and capabilities as we bring in external consultants. We also have a very strong actuarial team that we developed here at HAP over the last number of years. I will tell you, it's a challenge and a struggle as I talk to my colleagues across the state, or excuse me, across the country. Is how and where can you bring in resources around, I'll say the IT infrastructure, but also the people. So data scientists, right? So do we have the resource to pay data scientists and get the analytics capabilities, or do we have to ask for help essentially through a vendored solution, or can we leverage, I'll say, the health system resources in order to get there? There's puts and takes. Where I think we don't necessarily have the capability or the scale to build it. There's an opportunity to buy some services, and then there's an opportunity to look across the enterprise to be able to bring resources forward around those analytics and those insights. And any pop health program, obviously, it's number one, identify a cohort, identify a problem, measure yourselves about what's the business case to implement a program, and then measure yourself against that program. Are you seeing the outcome you expected? Whether that's a return on the investment from a financial standpoint, whether that's a quality or an experience investment that you intended to achieve. And you absolutely have to create the infrastructure to do so. One of the things that we've done at our health plan, again, which is smaller without significant financial resources to invest in technology and or a number of data scientists, is we've created, and I'm going to call it a QAI infrastructure, but quality and affordability initiatives is what we call it. And so we actually created a team, both project management operations and then partnering with our finance teams to be able to measure ourselves as we implement programs and bring in utilization data, bring in experience data, quality, and then of course the financial component.
And actually, I'm glad you brought up the part about partnering. So, if you had to guess, how many incoming pitches you get from different tech vendors or care vendors on a weekly or monthly basis?
Oh, 10 a week at
10 a
least.
week, yeah. Obviously, you're going to maybe pay more attention to ones that are hitting on pain points that you guys have prioritized. But like in general, how do you sort through those inbound, and what would it take to catch your eye to say, hey, listen, this might be something we want to look at, because it's a flood
Yeah,
of
no,
them.
it's a good question, and it's a struggle. So number one, we want to make sure that we're innovative. We want to make sure that we're developing programs that provide value. But the other piece of it is point solutions and more fragmentation. So one of the challenges with our, I'm going to say, our healthcare ecosystem, and if anybody has ever received care themselves or a family has, fragmentation is one of our largest challenges to achieve experience, outcome, and value. So one of the things that I think we're trying to move away from is how do we have a number of point solutions that aren't necessarily connected for the patient, for the provider, or for the health plan? And then certainly the upstream is the employer group, right? So are there solutions that can be integrated into the EMR or into the care management or the provider workflows? And that's one of the things we ask ourselves is, if I'm going to use a maternity program. We have a maternity program that we're really proud of. They've been a great partner. It is a vendored solution. We've looked at building it internally, of which we didn't feel like we had the ability to do so or the scale to do so. But one of the challenges was is working outside of EMR. And if we think about our provider network, so we have our Henry Ford aligned attributed lives. Certainly, we have some alignment on EMR, but then we also have the rest of our network, both in individual providers and or other health systems, where we may not have that bidirectional flow. So I think the challenge that we often, as we evaluate programs, is number one, what's the opportunity? Number two, what's the expected return on that investment, both financial quality and experience? And then what does the integration look like? And if it continues to fragment the care that the patient's going to receive, both for patient and or provider, then frankly, I'm less likely to go with it,
Yeah.
because I think we're actually just making the problem worse.
And thinking about the
And
EMR,
one of the things that we're doing, I was gonna say real quick, I'm gonna go into the EMRP. So we actually are investing in an Epic Payer platform. Epic now affords the ability for integrated health plans to actually use their provider-based platform. Number one, lower cost. Number two, less scale and infrastructure investment. With that, though, you'll still have all the appropriate firewalls. So we'll still have the Epic Payer platform for us. But what it will do is allow us in Michigan, about 90% of health systems are on Epic. So it'll allow us that bidirectional communication with most providers in the state. And then through interoperability, both required by regulation, but also clinical integration, is will give us the ability for all of those providers that are not on Epic, which we realize not everybody can afford or wants to invest or have already invested elsewhere, is give us that bidirectional clinical data flow, which doesn't exist today. And we can't talk about value-based care and alignment if you actually don't know what's happening on the provider side for the patient individually and or the payer. So as we move down that path, for us, Epic happens to be the answer, but having an integrated EMR platform, I think, is really important.
So, like, if you have so let's say you have a patient or a health plan member that's a Henry Ford patient as well. To me, it seems fairly obvious that any data or any care management done on the plan side on the Epic EMR for the plan side will be visible on the partnering provider side. Now, what if it is a patient, let's say from a different health system, but also an Epic? Is the health plan's work or documentation going to be seen to those other health plans that are not Henry Ford, other health systems that are not Henry Ford?
Yes, so that's the ideal. Now, obviously, you need permission from both sides, but Epic through Care Everywhere, we'll be able to actually see real-time records of care, tests, or interactions that the patients had with other health systems, really across the country. But for us, in as a Michigan-based plan, we really want to understand, what has the patient had, who's seen the patient, who's managing the patient. One of the things that we've struggled without that integration and access, even within our own enterprise, is if we're thinking about care management, the plan may have a care manager reaching out to the patient. The physician organization or the ambulatory office or medical home has a patient, or excuse me, a care manager reaching out to the patient. And if the patient was just hospitalized, likely having a hospital-based care manager reach out, working on discharge planning, not to mention pharmacy, DME, or whatever ancillary services they need. So what the goal is, and this is the whole idea of a medical home, right, is actually having a single source captain of the ship. One person or one team managing the patient and being able to see across the continuum of care what services they've seen and where. One of the reasons we've decided to invest in payer platform for us was, number one, to meet interoperability requirements, which all health plans have to meet by 1/1/27. And what that really requires is health plans have to make their data available to patients. So that actually came 2 or 3 years ago. Now we have to make through FHIR APIs data available to providers. Most providers are not ready for that or will not necessarily have something to do with it. The reason we chose to go down the path we did is the value. If we have to make the investment to meet interoperability requirements, which is a good thing, by the way, bidirectional data flow and access for our patients and our providers, is if we're going to make that investment, we wanted to have value from that investment. And that's why we chose to do payers, because of the clinical integration. So we can actually see diagnosis coding. We can actually see physician and or provider notes. We can see care management notes. We can see testing. We can share what testing has been done elsewhere. So certainly from the quality perspective, from the pharmacy and medication management perspective, and then the care plan, there's significant value there that we don't have today, other than sending claims files back and forth between payer and provider, which is really
Not great.
low value.
I mean, so it sounds like, unlocking this EMR integration is going to have huge benefits from just taking care of these members and avoiding redundancy, but actually having insight on what's going on with them. I think it sounds like it's going to be a
Absolutely. And
huge,
if you think about
should
it,
be
as an
big
ER doc,
shift.
I often saw a patient. They would tell me what they had done, but if I didn't have access to the chest X-ray they just had a week ago, managing a CHF patient. And this goes across any specialty, and certainly the continuum of care, being able to know what's been done, where we can reduce the inefficiencies that we're all trying to manage too, right? Make sure that we're getting the patient to the right place, right time, with the right test and the right care. And having a tool that will allow us to achieve that, again, hit the easy button. I mentioned at the beginning that one of my challenges with my old ED life was the challenge of doing my job well. That was one of the things that was just so frustrating, because didn't have the tool or the resource to know what was done, couldn't control anything outside of the four walls of my ED. And I know that's not unique to emergency medicine, right? It's we know that a physician or a provider taking care of a patient, have the patient in front of you have the EMR that you have right in front of you, but to know the holistic approach or the holistic journey of the patient is really, really important. And again, that doesn't necessarily need to be the provider in the office doing face to face. It's do we have a team that can help tee things up both for the patient and or the provider? And that's where I think having a tool in order to do so really allows us. Now, people and process need to follow, right? Tool is not going to solve all your problems, and the platform is li literally a tool. Now we need to develop and create people and process approaches that will, number one, utilize the tool, but ultimately deliver on that integrated experience.
And I mean, it kind of take you full circle from what you said in the beginning on that when you started going down the path of value-based care from the ER, and now you're kind of really delivering on that objective to kind of make that care better, more unified, more streamlined, more integrated. And so kind of like, my last question for you is, as you reflect on your career to date, what are you most proud of and what are you most excited about in the days ahead?
Yeah, I think about it in two ways. Number one is my clinical life, and really proud of the work we did on a daily basis, the teamwork, the team approach. I would say that translates to my current life, which is on the health plan side. And I really do think I'm going to take it less of what I've accomplished and what's ahead, and what the opportunity is. And I really do think, as physician leaders, it is up to us to figure out how best to solve the challenges in our healthcare ecosystem. And it is fragmented, it is difficult, and it really is our opportunity as physician leaders to change how we do business, to change the outcome, to own and manage the it's both a privilege and a curse to have the empowerment to decide, all right, where do we spend the dollars that we have to best serve our patients, to get them the highest quality care with value. And I really do think, you know, as we as I think about the next 5 to 10 years of my career, 5 to 10 years of my life, is how do we empower our providers? How do we empower our physicians to ultimately deliver that better experience for our patients? And one of the things that, you know, it does keep me up at night is, can't boil the ocean as a regional health plan CMO, can't fix the nation's healthcare problems, but we certainly can fix it in this setting, or certainly can fix it with this cohort. And frankly, it's again, it's wonderful and challenging at the same time, is keep focus on what we can manage, chip away, and then not get too caught up or frustrated with the whole ecosystem and the challenges are ahead.
Absolutely. No, this is wonderful, and a lot of good advice out there, and a lot of good insights. So I appreciate it, and thank you so much for joining.
Thanks, Eric. Really appreciate it.